Our forgotten children, let us not leave them behind. We have produced this book, Our Forgotten Children, with 15 authors to address the problem in our educational system, in the dealing with children that are differently abled, in the supporting of families, in our whole culture around raising children altogether. 15 people have contributed to this book. Their expertise, their life experience, their experience with raising their own children. Each one of them has brought a passion and understanding, a solution to the problem. Each one of them has an organization that they support. And the money raised from this book gets divided amongst each of the authors, where the money will go to the organizations that are supporting children and families today. We ask you to get behind this, please. Please go to theorchardofwisdom.org and click on Our Forgotten Children book. There you'll get to meet each author. You'll get to see all the books and how you can buy them, ebook, paperback book, and coming soon audiobook. This is all about supporting our children today so that they may be the solution for us tomorrow. After all, they are our leaders. So please let us be there for them. This is Sarah Troy from theorchardofwisdom.com, .org, and also selfdiscoverywisdom.com. Please, let us be there for our children. Let's support this book, and let's get the message out there that change is needed today. Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening, everybody. Welcome back to another edition of Our Forgotten Children Author Show. This is where we interview the authors that have been in the book to talk about their chapter. And today we have the wonderful Linda Orsini, who wrote a chapter in the book about kind of experience that she had with her students while teaching. We're going to be talking about the chapter today, but we're also going to be talking about why it is so important that this book keep on growing, keep on the narrative growing. It isn't just kind of out for a week, hop, buzz, and that's it. It's about the conversation we want to spark. Our children are in desperate need of change. The systems desperately need to change. Our future depends on it. So we want to keep the conversation going with the book. But today it's all about Linda and her chapter. And welcome, Linda. Good to see you again.
Oh, nice to see you, Sarah. Thank you for having me on.
Now, of course, you have got your copy of the book. I ordered 25 of them. I still haven't got them. So the book is right behind you there. And yes, thank you very much for all those that purchased. You put us on the international bestseller list, but we want to keep it going. As I said, keep the conversation going. And the audio will be out at the end of March, and where each author will either audio their own chapter, or AI will order it for do it for them, and then we'll be starting with Ask the Author platform, where people can come in and speak to the authors directly on their chapter and get even more nitty gritty from it. So this, we're going to keep this ongoing, and that's the importance of this book, isn't it, Linda? Is that we keep the conversation going?
Absolutely. This is just a beginning. Something that we want to evolve and really be mindful of.
Mindfulness, that's where we're wanting people to be in, because so many times, and I've been saying this all along, this isn't just for parents or teachers or people that work with kids or families. This is for everyone to be aware what a parent is facing, what teachers are facing, what children are facing. Because that awareness is so important, isn't it? Because change doesn't happen without it.
No, absolutely. And I was saying to some friends of mine who have been purchasing the books, who have young children and even grandchildren, I said, you know, you might want to consider, and it doesn't have to be sequential, but you can choose one chapter at a time, read it, and then kind of practice the techniques and the suggestions, you know, maybe for a week or as long as it resonates, and then move on to the next chapter, because you really want to digest. There's a lot of really valuable information.
And that's the thing, when one person has written a book, it's generally a story or a memoir. Mine has just come out. So it's kind of, you know, on, you know, where it's going and how it's building up, so to speak. When you have an anthology with different perspectives, it's wonderful to have all those different views, those different skills and techniques and ways of approaching things. it is a lot to digest all at once. And I totally agree with take it one chapter at a time. Speak about it. This is a perfect book for a book club, isn't it?
Fantastic book. Yeah.
Everybody read a chapter a week and come back and converse about it. Whether you are, you know, have a child, don't have a child, it doesn't matter. It is, again, about the awareness of what's going on. And it's only through conversation that we're going to get it going. So great to hear that people are reacting well to it. And I love that suggestion, one chapter at a time. But tell us about your chapter and why you wrote it in the way that you did.
Well, my chapter, as a retired school teacher of over 30 years, I love storytelling. I was a teacher librarian for many of those years. And so I start with a story to just kind of hook the reader in. Mm-hmm. And because I do feel that we remember what we felt as always opposed to the words. So I wanted to give people a general feeling of, you know, the high emotions our children have, because they are not self-regulated. As we know, the critical faculty of the mind, the conscious mind, doesn't develop until about 9 to 12. And so everything that a child hears from 0 to 7 or even 9, they take as the truth. Mm. And so it's very overwhelming. It's high emotions for them that they go through. And so I really guide the reader into how to help and support the children through their emotions.
And that is, I think, something we kind of ignore. It's all about education. Well, you know, what about the emotional aspect around what they're learning or how they're learning? Because not every child learns exactly the same way.
Absolutely.
And then so, what do you do, right? What do you do when you have a child that, you know, you've got 30 kids in a classroom as a teacher and you've got kids that learn in a different way?
It's really, I feel for educators because, you know, you got into education, you became an educator because you wanted to teach and support and guide children. And so then what happens is, you know, you have report cards, you have provincial testing, you're answering to parents and students and administration. And so you want to get through the curriculum, but sometimes it comes at a cost of dealing with behaviors, emotions, and those take time. You know, the thing is that we're rushing it. We're rushing it because our time is so limited. And children, they take a little longer to process all those emotions.
Never mind if they learn differently or if they're differently abled. You know, I discovered at 21 I had dyslexia. It was never picked up while I was in school, right? Because it wasn't kind of the obvious reversing letters. For me, it was reversing words and I couldn't do anything in columns at all. But none of that was ever picked up back in my day. You know, you either got it or you didn't get it. And then if you didn't get it, you were left behind. And it's like, how do you balance as a teacher seeing one child really kind of, oh, I've got it, I can do this, and another child, it's gobbledygook for them.
Yeah, and you probably learned really great coping skills. You could kind of slide through.
Just in school. I left school at 16. I gave up. You know, for me, it was, I missed too much of it due to illness. So I missed too much of it. And really, it became, you know, life lessons, learning by doing, right?
Yes. Yeah, I know. It's really hard on, I say the children, they might be in little bodies, but they are like individual souls. And to see each child that way really makes a big difference, because then you don't generalize them. And then you don't try to make, let's say, a round peg fit in a square hole.
Exactly. Like, of course, you have a podcast course, A Call for Love. And of course, everything that you do is driven around love. And I think that if you're a teacher, or if you're anything to do with children, if you're a parent and it not coming from a place of love, then you are not connecting with the child, because a child connects through love, then is eager to learn, eager to listen.
I agree. Everyone says, oh, call for love. Like love, it's too simple. It's too easy. It's just love. And I say, well, do you love everyone? And they look at me almost, shocked. No, I don't love everyone. And of course, it's not always romantic love.
No.
I think it is a respectful love. My mom used to say, you need to love everyone because they are part of this human race, but
Yes.
you don't have to like everyone.
And I like that. Yes, I was kind of brought up with something similar, right? It's that you can be courteous and respectful, but you don't have to like or even approve of what they're doing, but you just don't have to be nasty about it. And I feel right now that the general trend, it's okay to be nasty. And then kids pick that up and they start being nasty to each other. And to it's almost like a cut, isn't it, when a child is nasty to another child? Because as you said, they take everything literally. So if another child is picking on them, then they really do feel they've done something wrong, or they're unlovable, or they're unlikable.
Well, I never heard that, and I don't like that at all.
I was bullied, so I know what that's like. But I think that, when we speak to a child, we have to be very careful, not only in the tone that we speak, but the words that we speak, because, as you said, they're learning, and they're learning to understand what a word means. It's not just a word and it means this. What's the emotion around that word? Where do I use that word? How do I use that word? I mean, you start off with kind of a kid with the word, the D word. And what is the D word? It ends up in the F word. And but it's the impact of that word. They know it's bad, right? They know it's bad, but they don't know why it's bad. Or what they're discovering what these words mean. And if we don't If we're not careful with the way the words that we use with them, then when they get to know the actual meaning of it, they take it literally, right? And then it's something that starts piling up in their emotional psyche. Does that mean you don't love me?
Exactly. And I think that children are, in my chapter, I talk about emotional well-being and almost emotionally starved or malnourished. And so
Yes.
if a child hasn't got the cognitive functioning to know the difference between positive reinforcement and negative reinforcement, they just notice that they're getting attention, which is what they really crave.
Right. Yes.
So they can be using, negative influences to get attention. And it's not because they want to go against mainstream or air quotes be bad, but they just want attention from their caregivers.
Exactly. And we don't want them to have to get the attention through negativity. We want them to feel confident enough to be able to come to us and ask for that attention. My mother was three, and she was not whipped, but the ruler used on her for wanting a hug from her mother. Right? So, what does that say? Hugs are bad, right? So, we again, kids in their limitation of their discovery of what everything means will take things literally. And if you do a harsh no, then they're going to, think, well, what did I do wrong? Because immediately they take it on to themselves, don't they?
Yeah, that's unfortunate. Hopefully we've come past and through that era.
I don't know. I think in some ways, I think, yes, to a point, but I think also, as you said, with the administration on education today, this curriculum that you've got to push on the kids. Where is the time for the compassion? Where is the time for the loving nurturing? Where no curriculum today, just the storytelling or letting the kids tell you a story. But everything is so regimented, isn't it? And there's so much pressure on teachers and so little money and support that where is the time for that?
Well, it's interesting you say that because I taught for about 30 years, a little over, and for the first 15 years I was a classroom teacher. And towards the end of that 15 years ago, so we're talking about 17 years ago now, we had what was called DPA, daily physical activity. And so I decided that for my DPA, we were going to do yoga.
Ah, great.
We didn't call it yoga per se. I think we called it mindfulness because, some people have this connotation that yoga is religious. So I believe we mostly called it movement, mindful movement. And so I had each student bring in a yoga mat and we would put it in the corner of the room. And so I kind of snuck that in through the regular stream of daily physical activity. And we were active, and I never pressured my students to practice it. There was one or two that were quite resistant. They couldn't, they did not connect with it. So I had them be the guide on explaining. I would have this chart, and they would be like the teacher to guide the others into the poses, into the movements, into the shapes. And so it worked out really well, but you have to be quite,
Inventive.
yes.
No boxes here. Yeah, because that's, yeah, as you said, religious, connotation, and is it part of the curriculum? And other, is the board going to come down on you? I mean, I've interviewed a few doctors that have walked away from medicine because of the restrictions on how they treat their patients. And telling a patient, change your diet instead of giving them a drug or an operation, right? And so I know that this, my son had a fantastic teacher. In his room, he had a bathtub, he had a loft, he had a tree. And if you finished your work, you could go and read in the bathtub or in the loft or in the tree. And then, like, for talking about Einstein and science, he would come dressed up as Einstein. I mean, he really, every student excelled because he was somebody that was engaging. And they wanted to go and be able to read in the bathtub or in the loft or in the tree, right? And I think that kind of teaching makes children want to excel. They want to be engaged. And having those other kids that didn't want to do the yoga, but having them step into a role where they were still engaged, right? I don't want to get down on the floor and do that, but I don't mind telling everybody else to do it. So
That is so.
participation is important, right? Participation is important. Leave no child behind.
Yeah. And in all honesty, to sit at a desk, I can't sit still for that long. I mean, I bought a stand-up desk. I do not want to sit in my little 1 by 2 foot space all the time. I think we were meant to be moving and thinking and just we're energy. And so we need to move that energy and being stuck. And that's what I had said to Mickey on our interview, that since COVID, we were moving towards that. We were moving to the eclectic classroom where you could move into different spaces. And then COVID happened, and then we were regimented into back into our seats.
And it's against the very nature of a child. A child is about movement, right? It is about squirrelies. And to expect them to sit there hour after hour at a desk and have their mind on something and go against the very nature of who they are, we're asking for trouble. And I think that we see so many children that when we watch them as toddlers or preschoolers, and they're busy being creative and inventive and wondrous. And then we put them in the school system where we regiment them and tell them, you've got to learn this, you've got to learn that. I'm not interested in that. Sit down and do as you're told. All of a sudden, we're knocking out that beautiful spirit of wonderment and exploration. And we're telling them that their imagination really doesn't count.
Yeah, I really understand that. I taught grade 3 for many years,
Well, that's a good
and
age.
yeah, I love that age. But in Canada, Ontario, Canada, actually, the curriculum says in grade 3 we're supposed to learn about pioneers. And I have to, full disclosure, I couldn't stand the topic. I mean, I just feel like it's just, I had a lot of students coming from war-torn countries or English as a second language. And for them to really hear about churning butter and things like that, it didn't really resonate. I found it very dry. I would have much preferred a different, sub like a different topic. But, I was required to teach teach pioneers.
Yeah.
You know, and so if I wasn't interested, how was it going to make
exactly, exactly. And if you could have been inventive about it, and what are the pioneers of your own country that you come from? Let's look at the pioneers of the world, not just Canada, and compare how people, you know, did in different countries. And then I think it's more interesting because, you know, oh, you come from China. What do you do there? And I think it also stops separating people, but makes it more inclusive as well. But God forbid that you should think out of a box. So I think it also depends very much on the principal of the school, whether they're, you know, kind of really behind the teachers. You know, if as long as the children are engaged and learning, I don't really care how you do it. You know, be creative. And then you've got others that is, no, follow the rule of the law. And it depends which personality type they are, right?
Well, you still do have to answer to the ministry and create a report card. So you do have to cover it, even if the principal, you know, probably maybe thinks the same way as you, but there is accountability. So, you know, those ones you can, instead of doing it for a long, long, long time, you can abbreviate it a little bit and then maybe play with it. So I like that idea, like, you know, bring in other nationalities or cultures into it.
Yeah. Yes. My children are half Chinese. So of course, Chinese New Year, my husband used to come in dressed in Kung Fu outfits, and we had chow siu baos, you know, which are the barbecue pork buns. And he would do some little Kung Fu things for them, or, you know, the dragon type dance, and kind of introduce them to their culture. And we actually did have International Culture Day, where everybody from whatever their culture is came in dressed up as it. And the kids were intrigued and they were fascinated and they wanted to know more. And I'd like to see more of that, you know, especially in countries that are basically made up of immigrants, right? We're a hodgepodge here. And, you know, it's, we need to understand what ingredients are in this stew.
Yeah, well, as an English as a second language teacher, we did do a lot of that. We really tried to honor each child's culture. And even foods, oh my goodness, some of the foods the students' parents would bring in for us, it was just really decadent, and I really appreciated it. Yeah, it was a lot of fun, that part.
Yeah. So you became a librarian. My girlfriend did the same. She kind of left the classroom and went to be a librarian for the last 15 years, I think, of her school life, and loved it. You know, there's the other side of it, you know, the buying of the books was fun, but, you know, putting the books away and all of that, but the story time. And just getting the kids engaged. Why did you become a librarian?
Well, it's so interesting that you asked this, because I was a classroom teacher, and then I actually moved to a resource, which is special education and English as a second language. And then I morphed into the teacher librarian. But I am passionate about reading, about diving into different genres, and I love books. So it's so great that I'm participating as a collaborative author in this Our Forgotten Children. But I do think that story, and, you know, having children come before you and, you know, reading to them and using and stimulating their imagination and using it as a teachable moment, was not only powerful, but so engaging and so thrilling for me. I never, ever got tired. I used to go book buying, and I would ask the children in the school, okay, anyone want a recommendation? You can, you know, I will collect books that you want in the library. So then when we got the books in, I would call the room, and I would speak to the child and said, I got this in, you ordered this book, and you're going to be the first one to read it. And they would come down to the library, all happy. I absolutely loved it. And I loved seeing them get excited, turned on by literacy.
Yes. My grandchildren have been read almost from the moment they've been born. And, you know, now my grandson, who's almost three, you know how they love the same book over and over and over again, you know, until it drives you crazy. But he can literally go from page to page and tell you almost word for word what the story is. He can't read the words yet, but he knows the story so well he can read it back to us from memory. But they read, I don't know, 6 to 8 books a day at least. At least, and I'm always buying him books, and books are huge. And I think the engagement of books, and having fun changing your voices when you're reading them, right? And then having them maybe tell you the story back after a while when they've learned it a few times. It's so engaging and so good for their creative memory. You know, it allows them to think of what else they can do, what else they can achieve, adventures they could go on. And I think that today, and it's actually become an epidemic where parents are giving their kids the phone and the tablet, and it literally has been proven to change the neurons in the brain. And it's been even kind of looked at as some form of brainwashing, because they're not igniting their imagination, those skills that they need in order to work things out or look beyond something. And it's, yes, computers are here to stay. Yes, that technology is here to stay. But really, there's nothing better than holding a book and reading it to a child.
How many wonderful memories do we have? Well, I will speak for myself, where I have two boys, they would be on my lap and I'd be in the rocker and we'd be reading and talking, and you have that physical connection, you have the warmth, yes, you have undivided attention from your caregiver, from mm-hmm. your parent. And it was such a beautiful, special time. And I am trying to engage and welcome, you know, the Kindle book and the ebooks. And I did purchase the Kindle from Our Forgotten Children, but I love a book. I want to hold it. I want to put a bookmark in it.
Yes.
Yes. I want to pick it up. I want to flip through the pages. Mm-hmm. It's just a sensual experience too.
Yes.
And I am really trying, but for me, there's nothing that replaces a book. And mm-hmm. I've had this conversation with people, but.
And, you know, I understand if you're traveling and things like this, it's convenient and all of that. But you've also got to look at the lighting that's coming back. I'm 7 hours a day on this computer, right? I do not want to be picking up a Kindle and reading it. I want to then have a book with good lighting, curl up. That's the thing about a book, is the curl up, right? And get into the book. I love, I think a good book is when it leaves you with something that you keep digesting it over and over again, that you keep revisiting it. You know, something triggers, yes, I read that in a book. And that, you know, I have another genre called an author's kiss. And somebody said, why did you call it an author's kiss? Because I said, in a sense, an author is giving you a kiss with the storyline, with the intrigue, with the knowledge, with the, you know, the inspiration. And it's so wonderful to have. That I think, you know, reading is something personal. This is why I love book clubs. And this is why I'd love to see people have a book club with Our Forgotten Children, because each person reading that chapter is going to perceive it from where they're at. Are they a young mother? Are they a grandmother? Are they a teacher? Do they not have children at all and had no idea that teachers and parents were going through this? Well, this is what was happening in the system. And then that conversation that you have from all those different perspectives, look at the enrichment there, right? Oh, please, form a book club, folks, please. Definitely.
You don't have children, you go to a restaurant and yes. there's children sitting at the next table, you're in the grocery store, you're going to see children. And you know, I love the line, it takes a village to raise a mm-hmm. child. Yes. And so even if they're not our own, mm-hmm. but can we understand them? And of course we treat children the way we were raised.
Yes.
And maybe that's a good thing and maybe it isn't a good thing, but in order to be more aware, and times are changing, I dare say, and I've said to people, you know, I've mentioned this, I've forgotten children. And they said, well, I don't really have any children in my life. I said, well, you'd be surprised, mm-hmm. you know, how many children are in
crossing
your life.
Crossing your path. Yes.
Yeah.
And how many times do you see a mother with a child having a tantrum? And can't that mother get that child under control? But do you know if that child is on the spectrum or is having a, a hard time? Why are you immediately rushing to judgment? Instead, can I do something for you? Right? The mother needs to be on the child at that moment. When mine had a tantrum, I would just let them spend it. And people walk by, don't worry, she'll be okay in a moment. And they're, wherever on the shopping mall or whatever. And then they'll be fine. Are you okay now? Because trying to interrupt a child when they're in the middle of a tantrum is only going to exacerbate it. So either if you can remove them, you remove them. And if you can't remove them, let them spend it. And for all those people that want to judge along the road, you can come and sit in my shoes if you like. I'll give
And
you half
that's
an hour.
empathy really comes in, and self-compassion, because if there's a child having a tantrum in the store, you could distract them, you could help, if the mother's trying to push a carriage and
Yes.
groceries, maybe you could help with the groceries. You can think of it as that we're all in this together, and
Yes.
we're supporting, because sometimes in those circumstances, it's very embarrassing for the parent, even though they don't want to be embarrassed, but they kind of take some ownership of those emotional meltdowns onto their selves. And just knowing it's okay, I can wait an extra minute while your child does that in order to pass through the aisle.
Exactly. Yeah.
I think being more sensitive and compassionate and more empathy, as you mentioned in your chapter, I think is a really great thing for everybody.
We are in this together. We are in this together. We are a village, and we need to get back to the village mentality. That village is only as strong as everybody's participation. And when someone's down, we're there to pick them up. When somebody's up, we're there to celebrate. But that strength of that village is everybody's contribution and everybody's role. Everybody has a different role. Even the village idiot has a role. We all have a role. And it's understanding what that role is and how to be there for each other. And, we love to blame everything on COVID, and COVID definitely was a shakeup. But I don't think we can use the excuse of the, oh, we're not neighborly anymore because of COVID. No, we weren't neighborly before. Because we'd become fearful of people that lived around us instead of getting to know them, right? Why are you fearful of people you don't even know? We, I'm sure you did too. I used to go out with my doll's pram and be gone for hours walking around the neighborhood, right? As long as I came back for tea time, then it was fine. And I was little. Nowadays, if I kid, we can't see them at the bottom of the garden. We panic. And what kind of society do we have? So, we want our kids to get out there and have fun. So why don't we, as a neighborhood, watch out for each other's children? Have that child feel safe enough to come knocking on your door if they've fallen, or if there's a fight, or if there's something going on, or there's a stranger, right? Feel comfortable enough in the neighborhood. And I think, it's up to all of us to raise the children in the world, not just the burden on the parents.
No, it's our there are children,
Yes.
our forgotten children. It's the
Yes.
word, the pronoun is our. And we all belong to each other, a part of this, human experience, and we can do our part in really supporting and loving and showing kindness to each person.
Amen. Amen. Loving kindness. Step into that role. Look through that lens when you look at other people. You will see them differently. Right? You'll feel different in how you see things. We've become jaded. We've become shut off. This is part of the problem. This is why our children are being forgotten, because we've been going through a robotic curriculum and we're not feeding their soul, their spirit, their hearts, showing them all the beautiful. My other genre is raising our gifted children. They are gifted from the moment they're born. It's up to us to recognize what that gift is and nurture it, not dictate that now they've got to go and do something totally regimented and different that they won't ever use in their lives. Fundamentals they need to learn, but how about we look at what gift our children are and nurture that and help them find a path with it? Because we have so many adults out there with injured children inside of them. Right. And it's the need to go back and nurture that child, hug that child. I see you, I hear you, I love you. Right. But wouldn't it be nice that they wouldn't have to, because we've loved and nurtured and hugged them as they grow?
But we have to do that with ourself first. I
Yes.
feel some people who aren't, it's because they're not having that self-love for themselves. So it's really hard to give something that you don't have.
Yes. And that is our responsibility for our own lives. If I'm discontent, or if I'm disconnected, if life is just not feeding me, what do I need to do in my own self-discovery? What do I need to heal? How do and you may not, I don't love myself. Okay, but place love upon you. Right? Until you can find that path to loving yourself, place loving kindness on you. Stop beating yourself up. Loving, nurturing on you. Find the people that are going to help you heal that inner child and find that love path. And then you will find the love of self. When you find the love of self, you see the love elsewhere. And you bring that love to everyone else.
Well, I think the bridge to self-love is self-compassion because I say to my clients, if you're not loving yourself in this moment, even placing your hand on your heart, and which is a really good thing for the child to teach later, but you say, I recognize that I'm having unloving thoughts, like this inner critic that's really judgmental and critical. And it's okay. A lot of people experience that part of the
Yes.
common humanity. And so, I can be a little kinder and gentler to myself because maybe self-love is too much of a stretch. So
To start
maybe,
off with, yes. Yes.
maybe just starting with self-compassion, which really moves mountains.
Yeah, I mean, how many people just beat themselves up? I'm a failure, I'm a failure. Why? Because you tried something and it didn't work. And the reason it didn't work, it was the wrong fit. It's not who you're meant to be. It's not what you're here to do. So go on that discovery with love and compassion and intrigue to who you really are and what you are really here to do.
Absolutely.
The willingness to do so. I want people to go back and listen to our first show that we did together, where we talked about, be inspired to heal from the inside out, with the call for love, and where we talked all about that. And of course, they go to your author's page, they can see, kindness, compassion of our children with Mickey Gavin. And well, obviously we have our summit here too, which where every author speaks about what their chapter is about and why they participated in this book. So people can go to the orchardofwisdom.org and put in Linda Orsini, Orsini, and for some reason it came up with the date 2024, and there is your page there, and they can see all about you and everything that that you're doing, all of your links, but also tell everybody how what you offer people and where people can reach you.
Okay, well, I am, of course, Linda Orsini. My podcast is A Call for Love because when we're not in a place of love, then it is a call for love. And I help people transform their relationships with their thoughts and emotions to really find peace and, connect with your personal power, passion, and purpose. And I want to really instill in people that self-compassion. I'm an advocate for self-compassion, and I have courses and meditations. I'm a big advocate for mindfulness and for meditation. And so there's so much to dive into if they just follow and log into Global Wellness Education.
So that's your link.
Yes, Global Wellness Education is my website, and
Dot com.
there.com. Yeah. And they can find my podcast and Emotional Freedom Getting Unstuck course because if we want to be the change we seek in the world, it starts with us.
It does. It does. As you're busy pointing fingers elsewhere, there's three pointing back at you, going, what about you? What are you going to do about it? How are you going to make the change? And we need change in this world. This is why this book came about, because we desperately need change, and we need to change it at the core, which is our children. We want them to be the leaders that we need in the world, the leaders that lead with compassion, with creativity, with love, right? We want those kind of leaders because they see things differently. they treat people differently. And it's become a very much material world and everything material driven. And we need to go back. That call for love is absolutely apropos. Totally. A call for love, please, folks. So thank you, Linda, for sharing here today. Thank you very much for being a part of the book. Your contribution is absolutely wonderful. I'm very proud of this book. I'm very proud of even how it came about. And you know, the universe just was said, yes, these are the people. Here you are. And it's wonderful because I really do think we've got, you know, 15 chapters from different points of view, different ways to look at things. And this is book one in the series. There'll be another one next year. Two more books to come out this year. The next one will be Coaching Your Self-Discovery for a whole load of coaches. And then the other book will be Our Forgotten Seniors, because they're being forgotten as well, right? So it's time to address that as well. So definitely conviction. But thank you so much for being a part of this book and being the driving force behind it. And my God, do we need a call for love? Absolutely.
I love that we have connected, and I feel really proud and honored to be part of this book. So I thank
Thank
you
you.
for orchestrating that.
It was passion. I mean, it's 5 years. It's I knew this book had to be done, and it's finally here. I haven't got a copy to show yet, though. Mine hasn't arrived yet. But I know it's out there. People have got their copies, and I can't wait to get mine. And yes, I'm very proud of it and very honored to have all the people in it. So thank you so much for being there. And so, folks, please go and get the book. It's in ebook, it's in paperback, it's in many countries. If you go to ourforgottenchildren.org and go, sorry, orchardofwisdom.org, our forgotten children tag, you will see all of the authors there. There's a link back to their own author's page. You'll see where to buy the book, which country. You can buy it in ebook, you can buy it in paperback. And as I said, as the end of March, it will be in audio as well. And then you'll be able to book your time with ever whatever author that you want to speak to about their chapter and pick their brain and have a good conversation with them. And that'll be a paid platform because all the money raised from this book goes to each of the authors' organizations they support that are already supporting children and families. So this book keeps on giving. And let's keep it on, keep on giving. So thanks so much, Linda, and to everyone else out there. Thank you for your support. Bye for now. We hope that you enjoyed the show. There are so many more for you here on selfdiscoverywisdom.com. Just go to the podcast tag at the top there and you will see all the many genres and all 3,000 shows ready for your listening. We are here to serve you, to help you on your journey of life. And we know that through inspiration, it begets invitation. We are supported by you, the listeners, and those that we interview. Anything that you can spare us in donation would be greatly accepted. And we do hope that you enjoy the next show.